भवते वासुदेवाया। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today's reading is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 76, the battle between Shalva and the Vishnis, texts 6 through 12. So I guess we'll all do it together. Devasura manushyanam gandharvo ragarakshasam abhedyam kamagam vavre Sayanam Vishni Bhishanam. Maybe we'll do, just do all the Sanskrit and then we can read the English. Tateti Girishadishto Maya Parapuram Jaya Puram Nirmaya Shalvaya Radachaumam Ayasmayam. Salambha kamagam yanam tamodhama durasadam yayasdvara tavim chalvo vairam vrishni kritam smaram nirudhya senaya salvo mahatya bharatarshabha kurimba bhanjo pavanan odhyanani cha sarvasha Sagopurani Dwarani Prasadatta Latolika Viharamsa Vimanagyan Mepetu Sashvishtaya Shiladrumascha Shanaya Sarpa Asara Sarkata Pachandaschakravato Bhur Rajasa Charita Disha. The last one. Ityardhyamana sauvena krishnasya nagari vrisham navyapadyatasham rajam kriparena yatamahi. Okay. Iti thus. Ardhyamana tormented. Sauvena by the airplane Sauva, Krishnasya of Lord Krishna, Nagari, the city, Brisham, terribly, Na Abhyapadyata, could not have, Sham, peace, Rajan, O King, Tripurena, by the three aerial cities of the demons. Yatha, as, Mahi, the earth. Now Madan Mohan Prabhu will do the rest.
Text 6, translation. Okay. Actually, I think before reading text 6, I'm going to read the first 5 verses because it was a weekend and give us some continuity here. Because we remember the last chapter ended with the Rajasuya sacrifice and Diodana. So then it starts off this chapter to give us the continuity. Sukadev Goswami said, "Now, please hear, O King, another wondrous deed. How do you say it? Wondrous deed performed by Lord Krishna, who appeared in his human-like body to enjoy transcendental pastimes. Hear how he killed the master of Shalva." Salva was a friend of Shushupal's. When he attended the wedding of Rukmini, the Yadu warriors defeated him in battle, along with Jarasandha and other kings. So this is setting the reasoning behind such a mentality that would do what he did in these verses today. Shalva swore in the presence of all the kings, I will rid the earth of the Yadavas. Just see my prowess. Maybe a little proud there. Having thus made his vow, the foolish king proceeded to worship Lord Pashupati Shiva as his deity by eating a handful of dust each day and nothing more. The great Lord Umapati is known as he who is quickly pleased. Yet only at the end of a year did he gratify Salva, who had approached him for shelter by offering him a choice of benedictions. So that's where we're at so far. He just, he was pleased, Lord Shiva was pleased with him, and he offers him a choice of benedictions. So let's see what he comes up with. Shalva chose. So here's what he picked. Take one from Kalmi. He chose a vehicle that could be destroyed by neither the demigods, the demons, humans, Gandharvas, Ugras, nor Rakshasas, that could travel anywhere he wished to go and would terrify the Vrishnis. So this is what he came up with. This is the best thing to do with a choice from Lord Shiva. He came up with, I want a car, or actually a flying vehicle, that couldn't be destroyed. Can't be destroyed by the demigod. It sounds a little like the Hiranyakashipu who's trying to get all the angles here. Can't be destroyed by the demigods, the demons, the humans, Gandharvas. I don't know about the Gandharvas trying to destroy it, but the Rakshasas that could travel anywhere he wished to go and would terrify the Vrishnis. So, okay, this is his mindset because He looked at Draupadi, right, during the Draupadi Swayamvar, and he was smitten. Isn't that the word that they use, smitten? And we know when you contemplate the objects of the senses, the first thing that, I think it's the first thing that happens, is you develop a desire to obtain that. You become attached. You want to possess it. You want to own it. You want to have it for your pleasure. But then you get frustrated and angry. And your memory gets bewildered and your intelligence is lost. So we know Krishna also says that the demons are lost to themselves, that they get lost. So he was really upset about that and other things too. So let's see, now we're at text 7. Lord Shiva said, so be it. That's all he had to do. Lord Shiva just says, so be it. That's it. It happens. What a powerful person. I say, so be it. I say, so what? So be it. On his order, Maya Donovan, who conquers his enemy's cities, constructed a flying iron city named Shobha and presented it to Salva. So that's pretty amazing. You know, this Maya Donovan, he's done a bunch of things. And the demons, even though they're on the other side, they develop such incredible powers that they can do amazing things. And we can see that even today, that people become very powerful, can do amazing things, but their consciousness is not being observed by themselves. We have the verse, yam yama pismaram bhavam. They don't know that this bhavam, this is the bottom line. This is what you're tested on. It says at the time of death, you're going to be tested. So what are you going to be tested on? What's the course that we're studying in this lifetime is your bhavam, your state of consciousness, the mentality of why you do things. And this is the ultimate intelligence. Prabhupada says intelligence is the power to analyze something in the correct perspective. So most of the time, if one's not observing himself and applying self-realization, Krishna consciousness as a life, he more or less just reacts to everything. He doesn't. The mode of goodness has a time delay in it, built into it, where one reflects before he does something. He runs it through his principle and his intelligence, then he reacts, where passion and ignorance, they don't have that time delay. They just immediately, right off the cuff, they do things. So, this unassailable vehicle, what's that one mean, unassailable? Can't be conquered. Was filled with darkness, and could go anywhere. Upon obtaining it, Salva went to Dwarka, remembering the Vrishni's enmity towards him. Well, we know that Yudhisthira, I was trying to remember the name. Sesha, what's the name again for Yudhisthira? His enemy is never born. Ajatashatru. So for a devotee, he doesn't really have any enemies. He sees everyone as acting according to Krishna's plan, and in the Bhagavad Gita 12:13, I'm just going to read a little bit of this. It's such a nice verse, because Krishna mentions some things there that are very valuable for us, because as aspiring devotees, we're aware that we're being observed all the time by Krishna, the spiritual master, and we do things anukulena, that are favorable to Krishna. So that's ultimately the controlling mechanism for a devotee, is how to do this pleasing. For myself, I may do it one way. Of course, self being used in the conditional sense of the word, not in a realized sense of the word, but in the conditional sense, you do things just for the way what's good for you. But in devotional service, we're trained to please Krishna. In fact, all our chanting, Hare Krishna, is, please may I be engaged in your service under the internal potency, to be pleasing to you. Krishna is attracted to the qualities of a devotee. And that's why he brings them closer to him. So that stopping of the natural tendency and then thinking, how would this be pleasing to Krishna? That's a very special thing. And then maybe we'll go over the things that you overcome to be able to do that. 1.1.11, Anukulena. So I'm just going to read this 12.13 once. One who is non-envious, that makes it easy, right? What's the verse? 1.2, 1.1.2, Nirmatsarnam Satam. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who doesn't think himself a proprietor, who is free from false ego. I was just reading in Bhagavatam 3.5.30, and the word they had for false ego was aham tattva. I thought that's an interesting way to usually false ego's ahankar, but aham tattva. Yes, I'm the tattva. Okay. Who's free from false ego because he recognizes Krishna tattva, who is equal both in happiness and distress. That's also an elevated platform, because you're liberated already. Who's tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. So it says purport of Prabhupada. Coming again to the point of pure devotional service, the Lord describes the transcendental qualifications of pure devotee in these two verses. A pure devotee is never disturbed in any circumstances. Okay, that's a challenge, isn't it? Nor is envious of anyone, nor does a devotee become his enemy's enemy. He thinks, This is a Prabhupada's purport giving us a revelation of his devotional ecstasy. He says, what's it, that following in the footsteps, Mahajana Katasa Panta, where are real religious found, principles found in the hearts of the pure devotees. Pure devotees never disturbed in any circumstance, nor is he envious of anyone, nor does a devotee become his enemy. He thinks, this person is acting as my enemy due to my own misdeeds, so it's better to suffer than to protest. Other than being in a Bhagavatam class and hearing this in the association devotees, 325-25, who can understand this? Who would even be able to hear this without coming up with but? You know, how can you, it's better to suffer than to protest. Most conversation is someone complaining about something, isn't it? This didn't go right today, it's too hard. It's always something. I'm just going to jump to 1511 one time for a reason on that. It says, the endeavoring transcendentalists, we're in the endeavoring stage for most of us, who are situated in self-realization. Okay, we're situated, but there's also nishta, which is steady in self-realization. So before you're steady in self-realization, you're an endeavoring transcendentalist, but you're still becoming free from the anarthas. You know, there's these anartha. Anartha nivritti is the stage before nishta. So in the anartha, these are the unwanted things that for our stage, Vajana Kriya, the ones that are practicing devotional service, means how to overcome the anarthas and become nishta. So in this verse 15:11, the endeavoring transcendentalist who is situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. We're able to see by the association of each other, especially during class time. This is the classroom. After the class is over, then there's the lab where you have to practice what you've learned to see if it's stuck. Then you come back the next day and say, okay. Like I remember my math teacher used to write something on the board, and I said, oh, that looks easy. And then I tried to do it on my paper, and I could never. How did they? She looked, it was so easy when they wrote it on the board, but I couldn't do it. So we hear all these things, and certainly this all makes sense. But then when you try to do it, then you run into why it's so difficult. Then you come back the next day. So it's prescribed that we hear for a long time, because each time we try this, we can see. So it says, so we can see what's happening clearly, but those whose minds are not developed, so we're actually developing a subtle perception of what's going on from Krishna's angle of vision. So this is an incredible aspect of Krishna consciousness, is self-realization, understanding the true nature of the self. But those whose minds are not developed and are not situated in self-realization cannot see what's taking place, although they may try to. So you talk to a non-devotee and you try to have a conversation, explain to them a little bit what's going on. They can't understand it. Even if they try to, they try to empathize, they try to see. They can't understand. So in the Nectar of Instruction, there's a list of instructions, and there, text 2 and text 3, things that you should do and things you shouldn't do. There's one that's mentioned in both of those. Do you know which one is? The only one is mentioned twice in both of those verses. There's one thing that you should do and you shouldn't do, and it's listed under both of them. That, what is it? Not associate with the non-devotees. Because for a devotee, Nectar of Devotion says it's more, it's so difficult. Better I'd live in a cage of fire. Ooh, a cage of fire, that's severe. Okay, even when it gets hot outside, to try to associate with non-devotees, it's a very difficult thing to do. You just came. She had that. All right. So I'm going to try to stay here. All right. So his enmity. So here's what he did. He got in his new vehicle. He was all excited about getting it. I guess it took a little time to learn how to operate it. And it was full of darkness. He was right at home. And then he was remembering the Vrishni's enmity towards him. So that's the first thing. He got himself psyched up. You remember what he said to me? And remember what the hell they did this to you? You know how like you can get yourself all excited. So he got himself all excited. And then he saw a besiege the city with a large army. Now, what did these residents of this city here, this is Dwarka, right? What did they do? Are they guilty of anything? What did they do? Most of them are what, Krishna's queens, there's the family members. It's a beautiful city that's built with parks and all kinds of beautiful places. It's a nice day. All of a sudden, this giant machine comes over with also armies, and they attack them. What did they do? All right, here's what they did. Besieged the city with a large army, O best of Bharats. Decimating means like really messing it up, like destroying it. Decimating the outlying parks and gardens and mansions along with their observatories, towering gateways and surrounding walls, and all the public recreation areas. So just there for a second, imagine, here you are, it's a peaceful day, and some lunatic, I mean a terrorist, he just comes in and just ruins all the gardens, blows them up, knocks over the arches. So imagine what it would be like if, here we are, it's generally a fairly peaceful place, maybe there's a little road rage sometime, cuts you off, but then you see, you can't even see the head over the steering wheel, so you look, it's an old person that didn't even see you. So, I mean, what happens around here? So imagine all of a sudden somebody, an army appears. Of course, generally now we have radar, we understand something's going to come up, and they just start destroying everything. How would you feel about that? I mean, what did these residents do? They chanted Hare Krishna. They liked to be with Krishna. They wanted to be nice, because it says by performing devotional service, you're going to go to where Krishna, and when you leave this body, you go where Krishna is performing his pastimes. So these personalities, there's different groups of personalities here. Some of these are the sadhana cities. That they're going to go and be with Krishna. And here they are. They finally made it. They're with Krishna in Dwarka. And all of a sudden, the place is being devastated. So how do you feel? What are you going to do? So we'll get that if we got a couple more minutes. All right. So he's wrecking the whole place. From his excellent airship, he threw down torrents of weapons. So it's not explained the different kinds of weapons, but some of the weapons, okay, including stones, tree trunks, thunderbolts, okay. You have a machine that makes, lightning, I guess. Some kind of, those thunderbolts they got, you see them in science fiction plays. Snakes, so he had a whole collection of snakes, he just throws them out the plane on everybody. I mean, imagine what kind of mentality. Let's collect up all the snakes we can find and bring them on the plane and throw them on everybody. Huh. Were there snakes? Snakes on the plane? Oh, okay. We have. Well, what else do you throw on them? Hailstones. Okay, so you got to have a freezer and make some. Throw them. Okay, the fierce whirlwind arose and blanketed all directions with dust. So just see, he's practicing yoga, he's doing all the different things to get his kundalini and get his mystic powers. And what's he do with all that stuff? You see him sitting very straight, meditating, they're going to get some powers. And then what's their innermost thing? They're not they're not so nice, you know. Here's what you do when you get that power. Now they're going to see who's boss. Okay. So, thus, here we're up to text 12. Terribly tormented by the airship, Shobha, Lord Krishna's city had no peace, O king, just like the earth when it was attacked by the three aerial cities of the demons. So, of course, that's we're in Canto 10. That was Canto 7, Chapter 10. There's, in case you remember the name, Tripurari, who was Lord Shiva. And that's another situation where, you know, the demons, when they were defeated, and then Maya Donovan dipped them into this elixir and brought them back to life. And what do? They're just always agitating and they go after innocent people and they just harass them like anything. So it reminded me of for a devotee, because here we're trying to act how to stay pleasing to Krishna. So we've understood that we have a process how to do that, which will get rid of our anarthas. Now, of course, there's Madhurya Kandamani Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that there's four roots to these anarthas. And one of them is your past pious activities, which means your happiness. And the other one is your past impious activities, which is your distress. So we know right from the beginning in the Bhagavad Gita, Marta Sparsa Kuntaya, he says you have to learn to tolerate happiness and distress. And if you do learn how to tolerate it, you'll be liberated. So that's text 15. One who's equally poised in happiness, distress, and studying both is certainly eligible for liberation. So he's explaining that if you have to learn how to tolerate that, that's doing your bhajana kriya, you're practicing your devotional service with the aim of pleasing Krishna. And as you do, you become indifferent to the happiness and distress, which means you're becoming free from your anarthas. So how do you do that? How is it that you become steady in something that is pleasant and something that's not pleasant? That seems to be quite a mystery. So just like that, there's a lot of mystery in devotional service, because you're only given hints, because you have to do the work inside on your own heart. Nobody, Prabhupada would say, fly your own plane. So we're giving you hints, but you have to look inside. You have to be reflective and thoughtful. So there's a nice verse, Madhya Lila, chapter 22, text number 100. And there's a couple people that probably memorized that verse that can say it. Anukupasyasya samkalpam. Oh yeah. So if you want to say it, we could give you the microphone. So it would be here it comes. Thank you.
Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya bhajanam rakshishyatiti vishvaso gopritve badanam tatha atmanikshepa karpanye shadvidha shadanagatihi.
Thank you. It's nice. So in this this verse, this is the process of devotional service as Rupa Goswami's instruction. The process of surrender. So it says, these six divisions of surrender are accepted, are the acceptance of those things that are favorable to devotional service, and the rejection of unfavorable things. The conviction that Krishna will give me protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, full self-surrender and humility. So these... we can see at least that the one on gives protection. Krishna is going to protect me. What are we going to do if there was something like that happening here? The place is being bombed by stones, snakes, tree trunks, other elements. Very powerful. Who can go against Shiva? He's got benediction by Lord Shiva. We know that the demons, a lot of times, they get benedictions by Lord Shiva. The one with all the arms, Banasura, These are way out of our idea, but a devotee doesn't have to go take a Charles Atlas course in becoming powerful, you know, so much as mind, you know, get, you know? Yeah, okay, so Prabhupada, AC, we say AC Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. So the AC is just an abbreviation now, but it's stood by Abhay Charan, fearless. So the great heroes, they're fearless because they're fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna. So we have to think, do I really accept that Krishna is going to protect me? I mean, where Krishna's right here, he's in control of everything. He's going to protect me. This guy is really big and powerful. I'm like to turn the other cheek. I mean, what are you supposed to do in these circumstances? So we're thinking, for the only thing we have to do is to be pleasing to Prabhupada and to Krishna. And then the rest of it, just like we read from Bhagavad Gita 12:13, better to suffer than to protest. And that probably goes to the part on that's called humility, you know, how to do that. So here we see this horrendous act. This is horrendous. These innocent, I mean, can we even say they had even any past karma? These are liberated souls living in Dwarka. But yet it said in the beginning of the chapter that this was some more glorious activities about Krishna. This is part of his Leela. So just like when we just the other day, when Prabhupada landed in America 50 years ago, it's glorifying him that he was completely dependent on Krishna. I didn't know whether to go right or to go left. He had, what, 40 rupees, which there isn't even an exchange for rupees then. And he had, what, $20 for selling a Bhagavatam. So you see all the way that the devotees act. It says that the mother teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter because the relationship is there. So this is, we're learned, being taught by Srila Prabhupada's example, Acharya, preach, behavior, that how for us to do these things, how to take shelter. And one of the unique features about life is that's all that it's for. This is what we're actually to do. This is why difficulties come. They don't come so you to be having difficulty. They come so you can practice. Just like, for instance, tolerance. How would you ever practice tolerance if there wasn't something to tolerate? There'd be no way to do it, right? How would you, just like you say, I'm going to be big and strong, but I don't want to lift any weight because that's hard. So how will you get strong if you don't overcome resistance? It's a standard understanding that you have to overcome some resistance, and that's how you get stronger. So if some difficult situation comes up, a devotee, he takes shelter of the verses, the Bhagavad Gita. I want to please Krishna. I want to become indifferent to happiness and distress. Not to mention what takes place internally if you do this, because there's such subtleties of material existence that one has to become aware of. As he surrenders, he overcomes that, because your consciousness, you're actually going to become, we all become conscious more and more to the point that your liberated souls, this process is, liberation is a byproduct. It's not even like, even that nishta platform we're talking about, when you overcome anarthas and you're fixed on self-realization, that's only 5 out of 9. That's only like halfway to prema. All the good stuff actually starts happening. You get your taste, you become attached, you're experiencing wonderful emotions, and your love is developing of Krishna consciousness. So this is just the preliminary part. So if that humility, like we say, chanadapisne china, maybe. And it says one should feel himself lower in the straw on the street. That takes a little bit of doing. That's not such an easy thing to do. I get these different suggestions in my mind, but then I was going to say, well, It's easier if you're married, but I was going to censor that one because my wife's listening. I won't say that. I'm not going to say that. But somehow or other, Krishna, if you're a hard case, he signed your personal training. And so for humility. And you get to practice. So we get to practice. Every situation in life is to be utilized for Krishna consciousness. That's the intelligence. Just like it says a businessman knows how to make money if the market goes up or down. So a devotee knows how to utilize it to make advancement, whether it's good or bad. It's because if you're still stuck with the good or bad, then you're still in the first instruction. Never there was a time. Okay, so you have to take the first instruction. Never there was a time you didn't exist. Okay, that changes everything. So Krishna then says it's going to come and go like the winter seasons, but if you learn how to tolerate it, it's just said in code, learn how to tolerate it. That's got a lot in there. If you learn how to do that, then you're liberated, Brahma-bhuta, prasanama, so you'll be happy. You won't hanker, you won't lament. You'll see all living entities the same. So there's a keen point. If you take that sama-sarveshu bhuteshu, you can put that back to 434 and 435. You have to find the truth out to how to do that. You have to approach someone who's self-realized, and he'll explain to you what the truth is. The truth is that everything belongs, all these people belong to Krishna. So if everybody belongs to Krishna, that's what it means, full respect to others. One should be ready to offer all respects to others, not just a little bit, but all respect means that this person is part and parcel of Krishna. This person is a divine being that's in a process of coming out of the material energy based on the association of basically of Madhyam and Uttama Adhikari devotees, that they're carrying this mercy to, colloquialism, show you love, show them some love, give them some divine compassion on recognize, like when Prabhupada would look at us, anybody who experienced that, they felt something different. That first they felt no one ever looked at them, they always looked at their body. Now someone's looking at you, and you felt that part being contacted, your soul, but you felt such a wonderful feeling, a little hard to describe. And you felt obliged to try to serve that person. So for each of us, we have to work with each other. That's the austerity of a devotee. So but we're all in the same ship, and we actually have to be kind to one another and assist each other. Prabhupada would sometimes he would say, "I pray for your advancement." So I was thinking, what a wonderful idea. How many times, if somebody disturbs you, do you pray for their advancement? Because if they advance, then they won't disturb you anymore, right? They'll be nice to you too. So instead of being upset, you pray, if this person could only develop a little, you just pray for each other. Even though we're not qualified, a nice devotee once told me that he doesn't feel qualified to pray for anybody, we can still try it and just see. You actually feel better too if you do that instead of the other things that the mind comes up with about somebody who just insulted you or did something that you didn't like, which we see where that leads by these stories that we're reading. I'll become more powerful, I'll do this, I'll do that. And then he attacks him, drops all this horrible stuff. I mean, this is a really serious attack. I mean, we read it kind of like in almost cartoon form, but this was a real event that was very serious. Imagine if this was taking place here, how we would feel. I think they had the movie Red Dawn, where the country was being overrun by, we were invaded. America's never been invaded, the mainland anyway. So were occupied, but other places people have it. He was trying to actually destroy the whole place. Krishna came and saved the day, but and we get attacked in different ways, minor stuff, because we're in baseball, they have the major leagues, they have the fences like 300 feet away, but sometimes little league plays and they move the fence in like 50 feet, 100 feet, try to hit the ball. So we have our little problems, but these little problems we have to learn, practice. Okay, if it's something little, if it's my friend, if it's some, at least learn the forgiveness and learn to be merciful, learn to be kind, so we can at least practice with the smallest little infraction against our magnitude, my greatness you didn't recognize. You know, and then we could build up, but to here, this is like the major, this is major. Some, and he stays like with Yudhisthira, that, what was the name again? Ajatashatru. That, how could he feel not any enmity towards, I mean, nobody was devastated the way he was. His kingdom was taken away, his wife, everything. Tried to kill him over and over again. And he didn't take that seriously. So we get to practice, even though we don't particularly ask for those things. But that's there. Krishna is always helping us. So we should see, Krishna, this is what you sent me today. This is what the immediacy. This is what I need to work on. Otherwise, you wouldn't have sent it. And let me learn how to take shelter when even it's a little thing, much less if it's a big thing, because that's coming up. Yam yam abhisma bhavam. All right. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Glory to Prabhupada. Om Agyana Gunatya.
Ready?
So, I forgot to say my prayers in the beginning.
Just one note. You quoted the verse 15:11 from the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh yes, I did.
Yeah. There's been an editorial adjustment that changes the whole thing that you explained. And that is the comments.
I got an old.
Comments are.
Is this an old edition that I have here?
Yes, older.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
The endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all the
okay.
The way you explained it, it was made perfect sense with the commas in there, but they don't belong in there. And that was according to transcript and according to the purport. Prabhupada says right at the beginning, there were many transcendentalists on the path of spiritual self-realization, but one who was not situated in self-realization cannot see how things are changing in the body of the living entity. In other words, you can't see the process of transmigration going on. That's what Krishna just described. And at the end of the purport, only those who are actually in the yoga system and have realized the self, the world, and the Supreme Lord. In other words, the bhakti yogis, those who are engaged in pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness, can understand how things are taking place.
So, for my clarification,
I personally have not realized the Lord. Have you? In other words,
Prabhupada would answer that question. You can't say yes, you can't say no. He says, it's not a good question. He said, because if I say no, he said, I'll just see. If he says yes, he's out just see. You know, it's like, you can't answer the question. When you, how do you answer a question like that? You say, yeah, he's so puffed up. Or he doesn't
know. No, but I can answer that I've definitely not realized the Lord. And therefore, I cannot not actually understand how things are taking place in terms of the transmigration of the soul. That's the whole point.
It's a question of etiquette at this point, because the things that you say and
the
things.
Grammar.
That
the endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self realization, only the ones who are situated in self
realization. So, why is it an endeavoring? Why is the word endeavoring in there?
Because it's in the Sanskrit, yatanto.
Okay, but I mean, why is he an endeavoring? Why wouldn't it be an accomplished?
Because it's all levels of endeavoring.
Okay, so because we're saying we're green mangoes, because whenever we think about being pure, it gets into, there's an etiquette that Prabhupada gave us. But he says, even if, yasya prashada bhagava prashado, he says, by when you please the pure devotee, you make advancement. But because you're trying to please a pure devotee, even though you're not doing pure devotional service, he, like a rectifier, he offers what you're doing to Krishna. So how do you do anything? It's always by the mercy of the spiritual master. How is it that you're even considered a Brahmin?
The bottom line is, what did Prabhupada mean? What did he mean, right? And what did he mean when he said that endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization? There's no commas in the transcript. You understand that? Those were added. This was an interpretation of the editor.
Which one?
The first sentence of the translation of 1511, Bhagavad Gita, which you
okay.
quote.
Yes.
So the way it looks in the transcript is the endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. Do you understand that?
So it's one term. It's talking about the person who's an endeavoring transcendentalist
and
situated.
And endeavoring, he's achieved self-realization.
Okay.
There may be more levels of self-realization.
So then let's take the word self-realization. The word self, how does Krishna define the word self? 8.3, Bhagavad Gita. Well, but Krishna, he's asked by Arjuna, what do you mean by the self? So we'll take what Krishna says as a good meaning. All right, well, I was just going to say a simple thing. He says that the eternal nature is called the self. Okay, and a very simple thing is when you engage in devotional service, you are engaged in self-realization. And to the degree that you're consistently performing devotional service, to that degree you're situated in your constitutional position. That's all that I was going to say. I don't know where the comma was, though. All right, sorry. I'm frustrated. I'm fine. Well, we'll end on that note. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Oh, wait a second.
Quickie. We talked today about so-called turning the other cheek or accepting good and bad as all, you know, it's coming at us because not so much what somebody else is doing to us, but what we've done in the past, so we're reaping the results of our karmic past, right? When does intelligence come in? Because I remember one unfortunate experience everybody had in New York City, and Prabhupada said to the devotees there, you don't let go of your intelligence. You mind your authorities, but you don't ever give up your intelligence. So, can you talk about that a little bit?
Prabhupada would say independently thoughtful. You know, that sometimes, I remember there was one interesting conversation with Dhanavir Maharaj and Ridayananda Maharaj, who was giving class here maybe about 10 years ago and Ridayananda Maharaj was giving a class, and he explained something, and Dhanavir Maharaj said that you should just quote it. You shouldn't go into the explanation that he gave. So it went back and forth, and they had different angles of vision on most points, even though they're both wonderful devotees. And that was, before I say what it was, Prabhupada was asked about translation work by a devotee, begins with an S, translates a lot of books, I think he was a Russian devotee, Shubha, anyway, he came by, I have it, it's on the Veda base too, on the memories, and he asked Prabhupada, how do you translate? And he said, well, there's two different methods. He says there's literal, where you take each word and translate. And then he says there's another method, which is called Bhava Artha. And he said this Bhava Artha is the method that he uses, and he trained him like that. And he says Bhava Artha is that you understand the intention, the meaning of what's being said there. And he says then you put it in your own words. Then you go back and explain the different things. So the same idea that Prabhupada and Rudananda Maharaj says, is independently thoughtful. Not independent in the sense outside of the parampara, but independent means everybody understands everything slightly different. There's, even though it's the same understanding, it relates to them differently. And the Mahatma is sometimes termed as a broad-minded Mahatma. And the ideal thing is that Krishna wants to enjoy the living entities. That's what our constitutional position is. And each individual has a relationship with Krishna, even though there's main categories, but there's that 10, 14, 7 purport, which Sanatana Goswami explains how there's a quality, one quality unique to each individual, how they relate to each other, how the living entity is going to relate to Krishna. What you can give Krishna, nobody else can give him, your particular quality of love. And in devotional service, you get to try to do your very best. No place else do you really try to give it your all in all. Some people try for the family, different things, but in Krishna consciousness, you can use your creative intelligence of how to do something as nicely as possible. When do you ever access as nicely as possible for someone? Maybe for yourself a little, but most people are lazy. But for Krishna, you actually try to do something. So we see as the temples come up and the different things blossom out, these are offerings from the heart as nicely as possible. You cultivate to do something for Krishna with all of your heart. So, I forgot your question. I'm sorry. All glories of Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.